The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
My name is Jason Freeman, and I'm pleased to join you here to introduce tonight's guest, Rebecca Searle. Acclaimed by Bustle for her knack for writing beautiful stories that speak to the anxiety of forging a new road for oneself, Rebecca Searle is the New York Times bestselling author of One Italian Summer in 5 Years, The Dinner List, and the young adult novels The Edge of Falling and When You Were Mine. She also adapted her YA book series, Famous in Love, into a hit television series of the same name. And her book, When You Were Mine, was the basis of the 2022 film, Rosaline. Rosaline? Rosaline. She joins us tonight with her latest novel, Expiration Dates. A tale of romantic aspiration and exasperation, it follows the fortunes of a woman who, for each potential partner she meets, she magically receives a slip of paper that lists his name and the shelf life, as it were, for their time together. Tonight's author will be in conversation with Joe Piazza. She is the international best-selling author of 12 books, including the Good Morning America book club pick, We Are Not Like Them, co-written with Christine Pride. She's also the host of the critically acclaimed Under the Influence podcast. Her work has been featured in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, among other publications. And she lives right here in Philadelphia with her husband and 3 feral children. Those are her words, not mine. Philadelphia, please join me in welcoming tonight's guests.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I have to say, tonight is very special because I was born in Philadelphia, and it's where my whole family still lives, and I'm just really happy to be here tonight. So thank you for having me. And thank you, Joe, for being here.
Yes. Well, I mean, Philadelphia is the best city in America, as you all know.
Mm-hmm.
And I vowed a long time ago, after many years of living in New York, to only set my books here.
Sure. Sicilian inheritance.
Sicilian inheritance starts in Philadelphia and she flies to Sicily.
Okay, we'll take it.
Yeah, I want everyone to know that it does start here. Yes. Yes. But I love this book. How many of you have read it? Because we've been out for a week now.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, good, good. So now, all right, we know I wasn't going to do spoilers anyway, but now, like, I'm really going to toe the line of spoilers. I want to start out, I want you to describe the book a little bit, because I think an author describes her book
sure.
the best.
I will do it.
Yes.
Okay, Expiration Dates is the story of Daphne Bell. She is a young woman who, every time she meets a man, from the time she, like, first had crushes, she receives a slip of paper with his name and a number on it, and that number is the exact amount of time they'll spend together. So the book opens, she gets a slip of paper with just a name, and the number's blank. And what does it mean? It is a book about what it means to be single in your 20s, but I think probably more specifically in your 30s,
mm-hmm.
What it means to be searching and fate and the universe and all those, like, really small things I like to talk about.
The small things.
The small things.
That don't matter that much. Well, I love that little dose of magic in Daphne's story. And it makes me think a lot, too. How would you live your life, your romantic life, differently
mm-hmm.
if you did get these notes, right? Because I think so much of I was single for all of my 20s and mm-hmm. well into my 30s as
Same.
Well. Yes. I met my husband on a boat in the Galapagos, and we got married on my 35th birthday here in Philadelphia.
Joe actually wrote a book about mm-hmm. this called How to Be Married, and it is excellent. And when... I think when I got engaged, you sent it to me as a present.
Yeah,
it was so lovely, and I loved it. And so every time you talk about your, like, story, I'm like, I know,
because, like,
I read the book.
But I had a lot of that angst, right? That, oh, my gosh, when will I?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and, like, you're waiting. And I'm wondering if that angst is lifted if you know how long you will be with a person, or if it just makes it worse because you're getting the date and you're like, well, another one bites the dust.
Well, I think it's a little bit of, like, a double-edged sword, because I think on the one hand, if you're not entering every relationship the way I was, being like, maybe this is it, you know, like, maybe this is the thing, There's a certain level of presence. Like, you can appreciate an experience for what it actually is, which is so hard to do.
Yes.
If you really want to be partnered in a significant way, to allow something to be what it is, to allow it to teach you what it wants to teach you. But then on the other hand, you really, like, you never really commit. You never really give yourself over. And I think when we meet Daphne at the beginning of the book, she's like caught between these things.
But it is true. Like, I was very similar. I was the same way. I was like, with everyone, I'm like, maybe you're it.
Yeah, maybe you're, and maybe like, this is the person I am. Yeah. Or maybe like, you know, you meet somebody else and you're like, maybe this is the person I am.
Yep. I'm going to try on this identity for you. But you can never really lose yourself in the relationship then, because you're like, I'm just hoping this goes to exactly one conclusion.
Yes.
And every other conclusion will be bad for
and
me.
And I think that, like, there's a certain level of like letting go in a way that you need to really explore a relationship in a significant way, to really be partnered. And when we meet Daphne, like, she was actually my first character I wrote in a really long time, because I came off of a book called One Italian Summer that was about a young woman who's just lost her mother. And she, Katie, the protagonist of that book, really had no idea who she was. Like, we meet her in this place of very deep grief, and she's trying to figure out what her life is without her mom, who she feels like made all of her decisions for her. And I had a hard time with her, because for the first half, I was like, I found it really hard to, like, get her going. And when Daphne showed up, she was such a breath of fresh air, because she just knew exactly who she was from minute one. Like, I really loved writing her in that way. And I think she kind of feels like she has gamed the system when we meet her. Like, she's like, I got this. Like, no one, you know, no one's going to roll me over. Like, I got this. I was going to make a bad joke, but I'm not going to.
You can make all the bad jokes. It's Philadelphia. You can say things here you couldn't say in California. Well, I know that a couple other people have mentioned this, looking at these three books together. Even though they're completely different stories, completely different characters and settings, they do feel like a trilogy in a way, like a trilogy of different kinds of love. And I've appreciated the past two books so much because, you know, we see so many books about romantic love. And I love books about, you know, platonic love and friendship and familial love. And that's what you did with In 5 Years and One Italian Summer. And now we're getting into romantic love. But we got to explore those two worlds first. And I think it gives a weight to that kind of love that isn't normally given to it in our culture.
That's so nice. Thank you for saying that. I have heard people talk about the book sort of together, but I really love what you just said. Expiration Dates is a story about romantic love, but it's really also a story about self-love.
Yes.
Honestly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that I think the other two books were really focused on, right, like In 5 Years is a story of really deep female friendship. And for me, those friendships, like the women in my life, were the primary relationships in my life for a long time. And then One Italian Summer was, you know, the deep love between a mother and a daughter. And then, yes, I want to talk about romantic love, but I also really want to talk about, like, the way we have to know ourselves first and the way we have to accept and love ourselves. You know, all that, like, fun self-helpy stuff.
Right.
But it really...
Which we don't want to hear. You don't want to hear that in your 20s and early 30s when you're, like, the last single person at the wedding and you're like, I don't want to be your maid of honor again.
God, the closet full of dresses.
The closet full of dresses. Yeah. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
And you don't want to hear the... Well, you're getting this time to work on yourself. And when you finally meet that person, like, you're going to be a fully formed human in a really beautiful way.
But you know what's really crazy? So I ended up, like, I met my husband online. And when we matched, I was like, you look really familiar. Have we been out before? Because I'm like, I don't know. I've been dating for 15 years. Like, maybe we've gone on a date. I have no idea. And he wrote me back and said no, and I asked what his last name was, and I put it into my Gmail, and I looked it up, and we had been introduced by somebody who lived in New York 7 years before we met. And we had written each other back and forth, but I was only in Los Angeles. I was making a television show at the time, and then I went back to New York City. And he actually, at that time, had just broken up with somebody who didn't want to leave New York City, and I was never going to leave New York City. Like, I thought LA was the worst place in the universe. We can get there. Obviously, my opinions have changed. And he will often say to me, lament it a little bit, to say, isn't it sad? We could have had that time. Mm-hmm. And I really, two things. One, I feel like I really honestly don't think I could have met him a day before I did. Mm-hmm. And two, I think it's really beautiful that what is meant to become becomes.
Yes. Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. has struck me about our story for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I Nick Astor, who I met on that boat in the Galapagos and then got engaged to 3 months later, mm-hmm. will say things like that too. He's like, oh my gosh. He's like, what if we had met, because we had a lot of mutual friends too, yeah. but we were on different coasts. And so he's like, what if we'd met when this person could have introduced us 7 years earlier and we would have had all of this other time? And I'm like, I would not have dated you then.
Yeah.
Was very busy dating inappropriate men in New York City.
Yes.
And I would not have looked twice at you, you very handsome man who was not my type. So, yes.
Yeah, you get there when you get there.
You get there when you get there. And sometimes then you realize all of these cliches are indeed true.
I know.
But I love what you said about Daphne, because I do think that she loves herself and has gotten to a place where she's comfortable in her body mm-hmm. and comfortable with who she is mm-hmm. In a way that we don't always see female romantic leads either. We see them as a mess, just stumbling through.
Oh, yeah.
Hoping that the Hugh Grant character is going to love them enough.
Right. We all look like Dakota Johnson, but we can't walk in heels.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And that felt like a very conscious choice, for you as an author too, who has personally gone through this dating and this scene and then gotten to a place where you feel really great about how you are, and then I think you can finally love someone in the way that they deserve to be loved and that you deserve to be loved.
Well, thank you, Joe. I'll take that.
So how much of writing this book was inspired by your own journey and then, your own love story too?
Well, this is actually the first event that my husband isn't at a book tour.
Oh, so I think I can be a little bit more honest. That's much more fun. Yes.
He's been in all of them. He had to fly home yesterday. What I will say is no character, and I would be curious how you feel about this too. No character I write is ever based off of a particular person. But some of the relationships, mm-hmm. The quality of the relationships in the book are based off of relationships I had, because I think some of the lessons that Daphne has to learn are similar to the lessons mm-hmm. I had to learn in being single and going through relationships and looking for my partner. And so and I think I tried to make it, it's interesting when you're writing, people will often say the more specific something is, the more universal. And I think there's a lot mm-hmm. of truth in that. If you can really drill down into the minutia of an experience and an emotion, it will resonate more broadly in a way. Mm-hmm. And so there are really, really, really specific relationships in the book, but I think some of them end up feeling like things that if you have been single for a long time, you will recognize in some way. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's Daphne and I, like I said, we had a lot of the same lessons and we also had different ones, but there's a lot of me in the book, and I really, for a long time, I really wanted to write about the search for love. I felt like I had a lot to say about it, but I didn't really know how it ended. I didn't know what I was trying to say, how I was trying to button it up. Was the message just keep going, what you think is out there for you is out there for you, it's going to look like what you think it looks like, it's going to feel like what you think it feels like? Or is the message let go because the future that's waiting for you actually looks nothing like the one mm-hmm. that you think that you're meant for? I didn't know which of those it was going to be. And so I remember, I think 2021, I had the idea for this book, and I wrote my editor and I said, I really want my next book. I want to write about the search for love, and I think if I write it honest, he'll be there at the end of it. And then I ended up meeting my husband 3 months after I finished the book. Because yeah. I feel like I really, there was something about this experience that I had to really put down in real time. And I will say, I always felt like during all of my single years, and there were many of them, I didn't meet my husband until I was almost 37, I felt like meeting him, my person, would be like this big crescendo, would be like the climax of like the whole story of being single. But what it really was just the start of a totally different story.
Yeah.
Like a totally different story. And that story is not the story that we're here to talk about tonight. We're here to talk about the single and the searching one. I don't remember what the question was now, but hopefully that answered something.
No, but it went to a better place. That was good. This is why people come to book talks.
Okay, perfect. Okay?
Because you start somewhere
we meander.
And you end up somewhere
else.
Yeah,
we're novelists. Yes. We meander.
Yes. No, but I agree with you. And that was always my pitch to write How to Be Married. Because I met Nick Astor when I was 34, got married at 35. And I'd been a celebrity gossip columnist for a very long time. I used to edit those trashy magazines that were at the checkout
counter.
That's
so fun. I didn't know that about you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was my first job after college. The most fun job.
Where did
to
you
have.
Get scoop? Like, where does that come from?
Oh, my gosh. All right. So in the beginning, in the olden days, before the internet, there were just newspapers. And because of that, we got invited to everything because there weren't a zillion celebrity reporters. It was the New York Daily News, the New York Post, and People Magazine. So, like, literally, we were sitting next to celebrities at dinners, at movie premieres, and they would just talk to us like we were normal humans and they weren't animals in a zoo. And so it was them that told us things, or their publicists would tell us everything.
That's fun.
It was so much fun. It was so good. Yeah. But when I started pitching How to Be Married, I said, I'm like, look, we always talk about the like engagement and the wedding as if it's the end of every story. It's the end of every movie. And that's not the really interesting stuff. Like, the interesting stuff is the actual nitty gritty of a marriage.
Yes.
And I want to hear about that.
Yeah.
Like, this is the lead up to a marriage.
It is. I mean, I think that that's actually, I'm like sort of working on something else right now. And I think that my process is changing in a lot of ways because I think all of my books up until this point have been about the search, like what's coming, what's it going to be like, how are things going to turn out? And now it's about sitting with what is and processing that. And I like to say to my husband, I'm like, just as a reminder, sweetheart, like what doesn't make for good books are happy marriages.
Yes.
So like the marriages in my book like might not always be happy because that is not a compelling or interesting story. No. It doesn't mean it's us. But I think it is hard. Listen, I've never been a writer and been married. Like the book that comes out after this one will be the first one. And he inevitably will recognize himself in my work because we share a life together. Mm-hmm. And the characters in my book will have certain characteristics that he has because of course they will. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be him. Ditto my parents, ditto my best friends, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
It's interesting though.
It's interesting.
The way life sort of like seeps in, even if it's not the story that you're necessarily building.
Totally. I, with Sicilian Inheritance, because it's loosely based on a real life story, it's like my family doesn't understand what fiction is. And the book comes out next week and they're like, is that character me? And I'm like, no. It's I made the whole thing up and it's a novel. And they're like, it's definitely me. And I'm like, fine. Sure it is.
Take it.
Yes. And somehow my husband's really annoying quality of only making fancy pour over coffee ends up being in every book that
write. It's like a good character. It's a good character now.
Yeah. And it's something that I like just can't say out loud every morning to be like, I hate you. And I want a Mr. Coffee. But I can have my character say it.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel really good to write that.
Yeah. I feel you.
Yeah. But yeah, how has he gotten involved in your writing process now? Like, does he read drafts or does he read a finished book?
No.
Yeah, because I'm not married to a reader. I'm married to a person who reads like Wikipedia and Google Maps on his phone.
No, he doesn't. Although like my books are kind of his, he likes, One Italian Summer is too sad for him, he keeps saying.
It is sad.
Even though I arguably think it's probably my least sad book, but
I ugly cried at One Italian Summer.
Well, the beginning's sad, and then it kind of just gets happier as we go.
Get
happier. But, you know, he's not a big reader. And also, like, my my dream was always to be married to somebody who did not have any idea about what I did, and that is exactly what happened, and I like it that way.
Yeah.
So, like, this is my career and my life, and he has his, and that part works. So I feel like he'll probably read whatever. Like, he read expiration dates in, for those of you who don't know, a galley is, like, a first reader copy that we get, and it's used for promotional materials, and so he read it in that version when it was, you know, an actual book. Because I do think it's different to read a manuscript and be flipping through pages than it is to, like, actually get a book and to be able to understand a story as one whole and complete thing.
Yeah, totally. No, we went through a phase where Nick was trying to read my stuff. It was very sweet in the beginning, and then we'd say, no, we should stop
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's not at all enjoyable. So what did he think of the book?
He loved it.
Yeah,
he loved it. He's wonderful and very supportive. And the book is dedicated to him, so he liked that.
Oh, that is exciting. Yeah. Everybody likes to see that.
That was very sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I dedicated the new one to my daughters because it's a story of female empowerment.
Yeah. Totally.
And Charlie already got one. Charlie got Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, but he's pissed. He's like, my son is Charlie. And he's like, the girls got this one? Wow. How dare you? Yes. So you are working on something else now.
Yes.
Can you talk about it at all?
I feel like my work has been for a long time in dialogue with my actual life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I started off writing young adult novels. I was 23 and going through a really intense heartbreak, and I really resonated with what it felt like to be 17. And so I started off in YA, and then I grew up and I moved through my 20s. And as I entered my 30s, I want to talk about different things. I want to talk about female friendship and how we continue prioritizing those relationships when we grow up and we start making different choices and our lives look different. And so, you know, I wrote The Dinner List, and then In 5 Years, and then One Italian Summer. And I feel like I often also write into my fears or the areas of my life that I'm wrestling with or trying to understand. I think certainly, you know, my biggest fear is losing my mom, and I feel like One Italian Summer is kind of a love letter to my future self in that way. And Expiration Dates was, you know, really organically came out of my sort of like my search and my feeling of like where is he already? Like, what is taking so long? Mm-hmm. And so I am working on something new, and I think that it will speak to in some way what it means to be committed. Mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily about what it means to be married. I mean, I'm very newly into that journey for myself, but it is different. It is different, like I said, when like it's not all sort of out there. Mm-hmm. Like, how's it gonna be? How's it gonna turn out? It's more sort of like, okay, here is what life is. Here's what's come, and how do you sit with that? And so I think the next book will deal with those things.
Yeah.
Hopefully. If my editor doesn't hate it, we'll see.
Oh, she'll like it. She'll like it. We share a lot of the same publishing people.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. My last two books were published with Atria,
which
is your imprint. And we're working on a new one with Atria right now.
Yeah, so, wonderful. They're great.
They're a good publishing team. We love them. We do. But I mean, I like that. I was a journalist for so long and then a novelist, and I like to say that I think that I try to figure out the world through my writing.
Yeah.
I try to figure out who I am in the moment and like process life. So, yeah, that makes sense that this would move into a whole different phase for you.
You know, I mean, obviously I'm not the first writer to say this. I think Joan Didion always said, I write to figure out how I feel about my life. And I think it continues to be true.
Yeah.
So we'll see what
it works.
Next.
It just works. It really does. You sprinkle the novels with just the right amount of magic and fantasy, like just like a perfect little twist. How do you come up with those elements? Because they're so creative and so different than anything else that I've read.
Thank you. I sort of see magic as a way to cut to the heart of what I'm trying to talk about faster and easier. I think that in One Italian Summer, you could tell a story about a young woman who's lost her mom, and she goes to Italy because it's this place that meant a lot to her mom, and she meets people that her mom knew, and she finds letters that her mom wrote. But to me, it's just more interesting if you can just meet mom. Like, why not just meet mom and spend the summer with mom? And I think similarly in Expiration Dates, you could tell a story about a young woman who's like a serial dater and has all of these different kinds of relationships. But there's something really interesting about her like knowing these endings and how it informs her journey. And so I just see magic as a way to like to utilize a concept more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I hope like I, you know, there's this one portion that's magic, and then I sort of like ask readers to leave that at the door, mm-hmm. and the rest of it is real life, and you just kind of like either you want to go on the ride with me or you don't, and that's good. But Expiration Dates was the first book that I wrote where the protagonist knows about the magic when we meet her, mm-hmm. which I think contributed to her sense of self. Like, she's the one who introduces us to this idea. You know, I think in 5 years, we experience Danny having this vision 5 years in the future in One Italian Summer. We're with Katie when she meets her mom, when she meets young Carol. But in Expiration Dates, it opens and Daphne's like, here's my deal. Mm-hmm. And this has been my deal for a long time. So she's acclimated to this oddity in her life, which I think made her a different and interesting character for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because we weren't discovering it with her.
No. She knows.
She knows. Yes. She knows. Yeah, well, the way you do the magic is so interesting because like it's not like a magical world. It's like everything else is just very normal, except there's this one thing, and you just have to accept that that is a thing in this world. And then once you go with it, you're like, okay.
Yeah. And I grew up on magical realism short stories that did that, and I love that. I just finished a book called Shark Heart. Has anybody read that here?
No, but I get served it on Instagram all the time. Should I read
it? It's so good. It's about this woman who, by the way, I honestly, like, genuinely, like, I feel like I'm on book tour for Shark Heart. Like, I've talked about Shark Heart, like, as much as I've talked about Expiration Dates. But it's about a woman whose husband gets diagnosed with this condition. He's becoming he has this gene mutation, and within the year he's gonna become a great white shark. And yeah.
I really love like, that audible what? You're like, and, no, didn't see that coming.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and the way she writes this book, it's just so organic, and we really believe that this is a thing that just happens mm-hmm. in the world in which they live, you know, like any other horrible disease that we have in mm-hmm. our world. And it was beautiful and wonderful, and I loved it. If you buy one book, buy Expiration Dates, but if you buy two, buy Shark Heart and Expiration Dates.
I mean, I'm kind of sold. I want to know what's going to happen next with the Shark Heart. Also, like I said, I'm surfed that book on Instagram a lot, and I had no idea what it was going to be about, and that was not it.
Yeah, no. It's great. Mm-mm. It's great.
Mm-mm. I have a few, but I'm starting with just one. Hi. Do you outline your stories, or do you dive right in?
So usually my process is that I will have an idea, like, okay, a woman can see how long her relationships will last. She gets slips of paper that tell her how long her relationships will last. And then I'll kind of turn on that idea for honestly about a year. And then all of my books through Expiration Dates have some kind of midway twist in them. Mm-hmm. And to me, the twist is really what the book is about, like capital A about, I like to say, like where the heart of the story lies. And when I realize that twist, then I start writing pretty quickly. And I'll usually sit down and I'll make a list of maybe like 20 to 30 plot points that I think I have to hit, but I do not outline. And the books always turn out at least slightly, sometimes majorly different than what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I see that. I was talking to El Casamano, who writes the Finley Donovan series. Mm-hmm. And someone in the audience asked, are you a planner or a pantser?
Right.
And I had never heard the word pantser.
Fly by the seat of your pants.
Someone who flies by the seat of their pants.
Yes.
And I was like, well, I think when I was in high school, pantsing meant something very different, at least in Philadelphia. And maybe. So, but I'm a total pantser. I've got an idea, and then I'll just go with it. But I think for me, at least, that's part of the magic. Because the characters come alive and the story comes alive. Christine, because I co-write novels too, Christine is a total outliner and cannot handle my pantsing.
That's wild that you guys
she
write together if that's the case.
Hates it.
Interesting.
Hates it. But I mean, I think I like get her out of her boring outlining shell sometimes and she like reigns in my crazy. So it works.
Well, there are always like, for me at least, there are maybe two writing days over the course of writing a book where it really does feel like reading. Like, I'm also waiting to figure out what comes mm-hmm. next. And yes, I think if I were to outline, you get rid of that piece, that like kinetic energy, which is the reason that it's worth it, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that there is some magic in like not knowing. There really is. That's my only like woo-woo thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a lot of them, but that's a conversation for another time.
First off, I'm so excited. Rebecca, I came to your author talk in Phoenixville for One Italian Summer, and that was my first introduction to you, and I've read all your books and
thank you.
Love them, so thank you. I'm so curious about like the love letter to LA that Expiration Dates feels like a little bit. Like I feel like, you know, we have New York and then there's obviously Postano. And so I would love for you to speak a little about that. I think you alluded to it earlier of like you've changed your tune in LA and like why you chose to set the book there and the little pieces of LA.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I feel like I started writing about place really intensely because I was totally enamored with New York City. Like I was just in love with that town. And it felt really organic to talk about that because I think my love for that place was woven into the love stories in The Dinner List and in 5 Years. And what ended up happening was I sort of believe that the hot spot of my writing was in New York. Like I really talk about woo woo. Mm-hmm. I really thought that if I left New York City, I might not be a writer. Like I might not know how to write anymore or I wouldn't know how to write well. And for various reasons, I had to be in Los Angeles for quite a bit of time in 2018, which is when I was actively writing In 5 Years. And I ended up writing the majority of In 5 Years in LA. And then I sort of was like, okay. And I would go out, like I would be in LA and I would have to like have a meeting and I would end up staying for like 6 weeks. And I realized I really liked having a car and I liked like somewhere to put my groceries. And I liked that it didn't rain all the time. And there are all these really lovely things about living in Los Angeles. But I think by the time I got to Expiration Dates, writing about place is something that now just feels like a part of my process almost. Like orienting myself and where I'm telling this story is kind of how I get acquainted with the story. And so it's just really authentic now to how I write. And it was really fun to talk about a place that I, for many years, was kind of felt some hesitancy towards that now I really love. And it's not the LA that has a lot to do with Hollywood. Honestly, Daphne's LA has a lot in common with mine. And so it was fun to get to talk about it. And so thank you for that question.
Yeah, I think you did a beautiful job making LA a character in the book, which felt really nice. It is funny how New York City can make you feel like if you leave, you will die.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you will suffer here. You will, you know, have very no counter space.
I really can't believe it. I mean, I would say things. I had a studio apartment that had one window, and it was like 350 square feet. And I would say things like, but if I leave, I'll have to give all of this up.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. Truth.
It's wild.
Wild. Wild.
Yeah.
Like, I will never be anything if I leave this city.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been on book tour too long. What's the word where you're like?
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, you're fully, Stockholm syndrome. Yes. New York City. Years later, you look back and you're like, what was that?
I look back and I'm like, wow, life was hard there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but when you're in it, it's a bad boyfriend is what New York City is. It is a very handsome bad boyfriend.
Very handsome.
So handsome.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then when you leave him, you're like, oh my God, why didn't I marry that nice guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True.
What do you like to read when you're writing? Do you like to read stuff that's kind of similar? Do you veer away to the opposite? Do you not read at all because you're so deep in writing?
It's a good question. I tend to read a lot more when I'm actively writing than when I'm not. How about you? So some authors are the opposite.
Some are the opposite. I read a lot more when I'm writing.
Yeah.
And I also, a lot of writers I know will read opposite genre to get their head out of it. And I don't. I read within genre. So when I was doing Sicilian Inheritance, which I'm talking about a bunch because I go on book tour for that on Tuesday next week.
Everybody go buy it.
Yeah. Everybody buy the Sicilian Inheritance. It is an adventure set in Sicily and Philadelphia. but I had never written thriller or historical fiction, and that is both. And so I really immersed myself in historical fiction and in like thrillers and murder mysteries because I just kind of had to be taught how to write that genre. And so, for the first time, I was really doing a lot of those.
Yeah, I read a lot of women's fiction, which I guess you could say is what I write. Some books that I've loved lately are Charcart, obviously. I'm reading right now Help Wanted by Adele Waldman. Absolutely loved her last book, The Love Affairs of Nathaniel P. I thought it was incredible. I also talk about that a little too much. So I'm reading that. I loved Yellowface of last year. I thought that was excellent. So yeah, I tend to read women's fiction. I tend to read books that are in some way maybe similar to what it is I do, because it is helpful to be surrounded by words when you are building a world.
Yes.
World.
Yes.
Words world. And to see how other people lay down a sentence, it's inspiring.
Yeah. Or how they did something, right? Mm-hmm. Like how you got something done, even yes. as little as like, how did you get that person off that plane?
Yes.
And you're like, oh, okay, yes.
yes.
Also, I mean, damn you for mentioning shark heart, because I've mm-hmm. now thought of nothing except for, does yeah. he become a great white shark? Is there a copy in the library that I could take out? Okay, can you just check before
we're
we leave?
On that
would be really helpful for me. I need the answers immediately.
We are.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway yes, from yes. tonight.
Yeah. The takeaway is shark heart. You'll get 3 copies of Expiration Dates.
Yeah.
And you'll pre-order the Sicilian Inheritance, guys. We give you instructions.
That's right.
We really do. It's funny that you mentioned reading women's fiction. I was doing a podcast interview today.
Yeah, guess how we feel about that turn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was doing a podcast interview today, though, and you know, I got asked the same question. What are you reading now? And I realized I haven't read a book by a dude in a very long time.
I'm trying to think if that's true. Yeah.
I read The Overstory.
I read the book that American Fiction is based off of, which is written by a man. I don't remember what it's called now.
Or his name.
No.
Who just
cares? But that was honestly for my book club.
Yeah.
I started a book club. Yeah. It's very exciting.
Well, no, I mean, it's just very interesting to me. Like, I think as I veered into books that I would not like to call them women's fiction, but we live in this world, and not the magical one that I would like to live in, I veered towards women authors, and I don't know why. It does seem to be a personal choice.
Yeah. I also think that women are rating, I mean, I think a lot of the books that are quote-unquote working, like you look at the New York Times list, there are a lot of female authors, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Because... we're writing good books.
We are writing good books. We
Any
are
other
indeed.
Questions?
Do you ever have like a scenario where you have figured out the ending and then it changes? Or like, do you know the ending when you start the writing?
I usually have an idea of what it is I'm trying to say, like what I think the takeaway from the book is going to be. But the way I get there and like what choice she ultimately makes in order to achieve that changes. Mm-hmm. It changed actually really dramatically in Expiration Dates. I thought it was going to end a very, very different way. And I was really trying to pull her in that direction because I, Rebecca, had a lot of things I wanted to say about the way the story is supposed to turn mm-hmm. out and what the right thing to choose is. And her lesson ended up being different than mine. Like she had a different thing to learn and she made a different choice. And it was, you can tell, I mean, you can feel it, right? Like characters mm-hmm. will have a sort of like kinetic energy on the page. And sometimes they're like, listen, like we just have to do something different than the thing that you're planning. And that is what happened here for sure. And I think that when you finish it, it won't be hard to ascertain what it is I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What it is, but I think those make the best characters, like, and the best character choices.
They're fun to write.
The ones that you did not expect. And I say this to Christine, my co-writer, all the time, and I'm like, how is anything fun gonna happen if we have to follow an outline?
Yeah.
And then she's like, how will you know what happens next? And then we fight about it and have a drink and we work it out.
And then you write your book.
And we write a book. Yeah, it works out.
This is a little bit about dinner list, so sorry for bringing
no,
up a different
please.
Book, but when you guys are talking about using the magic, which Joe said, which I love, it's something I love about your books. You use magic in that one to answer like pretty existential question. And I'm just curious, like, what's your personal thoughts about like all the questions that dinner lists bring up about like, who would you have at dinner, like dead or alive, or like, just do you find out what people think about you? Do you find out what happens to the people you love? Like, those
like
things, all those big questions.
who's
pressure.
Who's on my dinner list, basically? Yeah. It's interesting because the dinner list, for those of you who don't know, is my first adult novel, which always sounds like, does it? Well, I don't know, maybe you don't, because I came from young adult, mm-hmm. now I talk about adult, but every time I say the word like adult novel, it feels like I'm writing porn.
It's
just books for grown-ups.
It does sound a little porny, to be honest.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. But anyway, it's about a woman who shows up to her 30th birthday dinner, and it's that dinner. If you could have dinner with any 5 people, living or dead, who would they be? So when we went out to promote that book, we did a lot of, I mean, remember back before COVID when we used to do all those bookseller dinners? Mm-hmm. And we, like, through these dinner parties for booksellers across the country, which was really lovely, and we would talk about, like, you know, who's on your list. And I think when I came up with the idea and I was thinking about it, it's like, oh, it's all celebrities. But what you end up realizing is, like, of course it's not. It's somebody who's lost their mother or their uncle or their grandfather. And, you know, their dad never got to meet their son or whatever it is. And it becomes this very personal thing. And so I think that my list, you know, I mean, probably still has, like, Joan Didion on it. And there are a few people, but also has become more personal as the years have gone on.
You don't want to go to dinner with celebrities. I've done that, yeah. And, like, trust me, they are always a disappointment.
Yeah, then they're just talking about themselves.
Except for Keanu Reeves.
Bless. Yeah. Bless that man.
He was truly excellent to have dinner with, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
Basically, I'm just wondering where you're pulling your names for your characters from. Are they from people you know in real life? Are they celebrity names that you admire, or just from baby lists? Like, where are they coming from?
Yeah. Names for characters. You know what, it's funny? This is, I think... this is my, like, fifth or sixth event this week, and everybody has asked that question, which I think is so interesting because I have no answer for it. Like, mm-hmm. There was a period of time in which, like, every new character I'd write was named Jessica, and my agent was like, they can't all be named Jessica. Could you think of, like, a second name that they could possibly be? And sometimes I'll get to the end of the book and I'll realize, like, oh, his name is Greg, and there's already a Greg mm-hmm. in a different book. And then I will honestly, like, just start Googling occasionally, and this tends to happen with the people that, like, sometimes have, like, we're saying that spark, they will come with a name. It's very rare. It almost never happens for my main character, but occasionally someone will come with a name that's really particular. And Hugo in this book definitely came with a name.
I thought Hugo might have come with a name.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 That felt like, yeah.
He did, energy. But the other ones are all sort of like,
all right, fine.
You know, like, babyname.com
you
or, like,
be a
looking
Jennifer
up.
Or a Megan.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. I had one character, which you will know when you start Sicilian tonight. You're finished Sharkheart. What else are you going to read?
It's true. It's true.
But it's set in Sicily, so her name is Giuseppina. And it was a name I had never heard before. I mean, she literally came out of the ether and was like, people call me Juicy. Like Juicy. And I was like, where did you come from?
Yeah, that's special.
That
but
was special.
Rare.
But rare. And she's the best character ever because she just, like, wanted to be created from whole cloth.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And as did Hugo. And I could tell the second that I saw him.
Yeah, you can feel it. It's
I can
a different
feel it.
Thing.
It's a different energy. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Joe. This is so nice. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.